And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.
On this January 25th, 2017, on Startup Radio. Startup Radio is a featured show as part of the STEM Dadia Network. Our sister shows are Gaming Chords and STEM Voices. And on all of the shows, we're going to have lots of interesting people coming down and talking with us over the next several months and through the year. On Startup Radio today, though, what I'd like to do is just have a chat and give you some of my thoughts on trademarks and brands and protecting those kind of identities in today's environment with social media and the internet and so forth, and give you some tips so that if you are a startup or thinking about a startup out there, or maybe you're no longer a startup but just simply need to have some questions about trademarks answered, that maybe we can provide a little bit of information. As always, though, I recommend that people contact an attorney to discuss the details of their specific situation, and nothing that I say here should be construed as specific legal advice to anybody out there, because I really don't know who you are out there unless somebody calls in and I'm actually talking to them and understanding the situation. With that set aside, or having been said is a better way of putting it, let's talk trademarks. What is a trademark? A trademark is really a mark that one uses in trade. I know it sounds basic, but it's used in commerce. And typically you think of trademarks as brand identifiers, as a mark or a word or set of words that identify a particular product or service or products or services. McDonald's is a trademark for the sale of hamburgers. If we talk about I'm going to McDonald's, the pervasiveness of that, everybody knows that I'm going to go get some food at one of the McDonald's chain restaurants, establishments that are spread throughout the country and the world. If I say I'm going to Burger King, I'm going to buy an Apple, I'm going to buy an iPhone, Apple, maybe not so much. You may not know whether I'm buying an Apple computer or whether I'm going to go buy a green or red apple to eat. But if I say iPhone, you know that an iPhone not only is a product, but it's also a trademark. It's used to identify the product or services. Now, in the United States, trademarks fall into, generally trademarks fall into intellectual property, but in the United States, we have three or four really basic types of intellectual property. We have copyright, and the United States government within the United States has exclusive control over copyrights. So there are no state copyrights. There's no copyright office in Illinois, really, that you can register anything. It's exclusive to the United States. The United States Copyright Office is the entity that can provide a copyright registration, assuming that you meet all the requirements. Patents, likewise, in the United States, are through the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Again, federal, you're really not going to go down to Springfield, Illinois to register a patent. The Patent and Trademark Office, the United States Patent and Trademark Office within the United States is really the exclusive body for that. Now, as far as trademarks go, though, you can register state trademarks, but depending on the state, and I'm going to make a generalization here that would need to be confirmed if you had specific situations in specific states, but if I generalized for a moment, it's really not worth the time and effort to obtain a state trademark. But to obtain a federal trademark, again, with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, or USPTO, or PTO for short, you need to be involved in interstate commerce. What is interstate commerce? Interstate commerce is between one or more, or two or more states, rather. So if you are only a hot dog stand in southern Illinois and that's the only place that you do business, you are not going to be able to obtain a federal trademark. However, if you have a hot dog stand that travels and goes to northwest Indiana through Chicago and up to southeastern Wisconsin in the tri-state area, you are engaged. More than likely, assuming that you're selling and engaged in commerce, you are engaged in interstate commerce. And so you could obtain a trademark. But what is a trademark beyond that? What is it that I can get? Let's assume that you are engaged in interstate commerce. And I would argue that many businesses, if they have a website presence, and depending on their products or services, they may be engaged in interstate commerce. Of course, if a restaurant exists only in one location and does not ship any food out, doesn't take orders from places that it can't have somebody come in and carry out, then even though you may have a website, you're really not engaged in interstate commerce. However, if you're a restaurant or you're selling food and I say I'd like to place an order for shipment of lobsters and you're able to ship the lobsters through states, then again, you are engaged in interstate commerce. So it depends on the business. It depends on the scope. Just having an internet presence and marketing your product does not mean that you have interstate commerce by itself. If the only audience that's going to order from you are those within a two-mile radius and you're in the middle of a state, you're not engaged in interstate commerce. That being said, many businesses are. If they have a website presence, if they take orders from people all around the country, then they are in interstate commerce and can file for a federal trademark. The question on the side here that I'm not going to explore is when you're not engaged in interstate commerce, what can you do to protect your mark? I'm not going to get into that. So the intrastate commerce, solely intrastate commerce, I'm going to push off to the side for the time being. So let's say that we are going to be engaged in interstate commerce, which is a good point because under the federal trademark laws and when we apply for a federal trademark, we don't yet need to be using the trademark. We can have the intent to use. So we can file an application with the USPTO for a mark that is in use. Or if it's a great idea and you haven't gone live yet and the website's about ready to be developed and you need some time but you don't want somebody to take that particular mark or that brand identifier, then you file with an intent to use. Now, later down the road, you're going to have a certain amount of time by which you need to begin using that mark and file an affidavit or statement of use. You can get extensions, limited number, but it is possible to file for an intent to use. And so circling back just for a moment to those that are intrastate, let's say that you are intending to expand into Wisconsin from Illinois and open a shop. Well, then you have the intent to use it interstate, and so that too allows you to file for the Federal Trademark Office with the USPTO. So we don't use really a novel. Like if somebody writes a novel, we're not talking trademarks. We're not talking trademarks if you come up with the great new design product and you're talking about the schematics. What we're talking about is a brand identifier, a trademark in terms of a word or a stylized mark. And I typically, you know, a stylized mark is a logo. And going back to McDonald's as the example, McDonald's, the word by itself, without any font, stylistic components whatsoever, McDonald's, the word for food industry, for hamburgers, is a word mark. The Golden Arches would be a stylized mark. It's a logo stylized mark. So when we talk about word mark, we really do mean just the word. When we're talking about any embellishments on a word, such as the way that it's written, the font, the stylistic aspects, then we are getting into stylized marks. And that's important because when you file the application or when your attorney files the application, there's certain nuances that are needed and certain descriptions that are needed for the stylized mark. You actually need to describe in words the stylized mark, and there's an art to it. It may seem straightforward at first until you get a rejection back from the Patent and Trademark Office, or they offer suggestions, and then you need to accept or reject that suggestion if they didn't like your original description. So drafting a description of a stylized mark, there is an art to it in my mind. So what do we talk about with trademarks? I mean, to some extent, this both is legal and business. If I say that if I have a business selling toilet paper, and I come up with a slogan that says, we sell the best toilet paper throughout the United States and the world. Is that really a trademark? Maybe. Maybe not. It's a bit too wordy in my mind, and it would be on the extremes. On the other hand, if somebody says the best toilet paper nationwide or the softest toilet paper nationwide, maybe that slogan is a brand identifier. It can be. But let's talk about the marks, the type of marks, though. And there are four legal classifications of trademarks. There are your generic marks. And some people may disagree with me on these examples, but they're examples that I use when I talk to clients and other lay people. And by that, I mean those that do not have a law degree. And when we talk about generic marks, think about Apple, the example I used earlier. If I'm wanting to use the mark Apple, or apples, for selling the edible apples, that's a generic. It's just generic. It's basically what it is. There's nothing about it. Or toilet paper or tissue paper. And that kind of flows into being descriptive. But a generic word mark, a generic mark, is something that is just a generic word that such as apple, for example, or orange. Now, a descriptive mark might be that, news station. if it's a news television station, if you're going to apply for a trademark for news station, you are going to get a response back that it's rejected because it's a descriptive mark. It merely describes what the station does. It's a news station. If you were to add something to that, maybe the most expansive or the most incredulous news station, then maybe you get it for the combination of those words, but you'd end up disclaiming the ability to have a mark for news station. So some people have the misperception that if they obtain a mark for, let's say, the most fabulous news station, that they can keep other people from using news station. Well, that's not the case. Even if you obtained the most fabulous news station as a mark, that combination of words, you'd have to probably disclaim news station, so that you can't control what somebody does or doesn't do with news station. That's the descriptive part. It's the combination, the added words that may make it something more. Now, what's interesting is generic marks will never be within their classification. We'll get to classifications in a moment. But generic marks can never become protectable within the area in which they're generic or for the purpose that they are generic. Descriptive marks, on the other hand, have the possibility of being protectable and registered where the descriptive mark acquires secondary meaning. And that means that even though it may be descriptive, it's acquired secondary meaning and people recognize it. It doesn't need to be the 100% exclusive use of that mark, but it needs to have acquired secondary meaning so that if you use a search engine, that particular mark is meaning your business. If you go through the search results, it ties to the business seeking the trademark. So there's generic, descriptive. And generally, you need to show for descriptive to acquire secondary meaning that it's been used in commerce for 5 years and thereafter has secondary meaning. And so if you pull up search results, the top 30 search results, and you have only 5 of those hits using the mark with the association to your business, and the others are other businesses that are using the same mark, you're not going to have acquired secondary meaning. Now, the third type is arbitrary. And I would use Apple Computer again, Apple associated with computers, as arbitrary. The connection between the word Apple and computers is arbitrary, and assuming that the USPTO agrees, you do not have to show secondary meaning, and assuming that nobody else has applied for the same mark and obtained it, then you, meeting other qualifications and requirements, would perhaps be able to get the mark. And the reason, I'll get to that in just a moment, there are a number of variables that I don't have time to discuss everything here today, but arbitrary is, if it's arbitrary and nobody else is doing it, then it should be registerable, protectable. The fourth classification is fanciful. And that's where you come up with a word or a combination that nobody really has come up with before. And really, you almost need to know the background of a particular mark or name of a company to know whether it's fanciful or not. So, for example, Kleenex very well may be fanciful. Now, we all know that Kleenex now, I mean, it's almost the reverse of secondary meaning, right? The original trademark has acquired, was a brand, but now it actually means the product, generally speaking. So if I ask somebody, can I have a Kleenex, I'm not asking them to pull out a box with the Kleenex logo on it and hand me one. We're talking about any tissue paper. But fanciful is a something that's just, you know, novel, that's created, that's not even necessarily an existing word that exists out there, or at least used in commerce. So anyway, those are the four classifications: generic, no registration possible; descriptive, at the outset, no registration possible if it's been in use 5 or more years and acquired secondary meaning, it's possible to get registration. And then arbitrary and fanciful are your best shots at obtaining registration for a trademark. So if you have already thought about your business name, then you kind of need to see whether it would fit in with one of those categories and what the odds are and so forth. But if you haven't thought of the business name, then, you know, the closer or the more that you can get into arbitrary or fanciful, the more likely you're going to have a protectable mark from the USPTO's perspective. The other big factor, though, and this is where everybody needs to really start, once you've come up with the names, the next place to go before you apply for a mark, and your attorney or attorneys, lawyers, should do this, of course, but you can do it yourself. You can go to the USPTO.gov, the government website, the Patent and Trademark Office's website, and when you get there, you can look for the trademarks. It's very straightforward. You type in USPTO.gov, it's going to load up, and then at the top, just below the USPTO logo, you're going to see patents. We're not talking about that today. You're going to scroll over or move the mouse over to trademarks, and then just to, in the second column, application process, you'll go to searching trademarks, and then you're going to scroll down. There's a lot of information that you can do, but you're going to want to use TESS, the Trademark Electronic Search System, TESS, and that's almost to the bottom of the page, at least mine. It also, below that, just below that, it has a box, search trademarks. You click on that, and then you see the choices. Now, we had talked about word mark, and then I also talked about stylized mark. Here it's called design mark. So word marks, design marks, stylized marks. You could search your word mark, or you can use more advanced to search the word and the design mark. And the design mark, how do you search that? Well, again, that's where those descriptions that I talked about come in, and there's certainly an art to searching for elements of a design mark. They have guidance there, but that's how you can quickly and inefficiently, and inexpensively search on your own for a particular mark, and then you'll get results, maybe, maybe not. And if you get results, like, let's do just an example, if you follow along with me for a moment, if you happen to be near your website, if you put in drone, you are going to get all kinds of records, 558 as of when I'm doing it. And if you look through the column, serial number means you get the serial number when you apply. The registration number you receive if it has been granted, and then the status, you know, check status, and then live or dead. Live means it's still in process. Dead means that it either was denied or somebody didn't follow through on the application. If you do search drone, and it lists 50 on each page, so the first 50, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five of those have registrations, minus one, an additional one that's dead, that was not registered, so that's six. 44 of the 50 are current applications for the mark drone, or something with drone. I mean, it's not just drone. Again, as you know, you're telling me in there, drone for drones would be probably either generic or descriptive. It's a drone. We're selling drones. The drone store is descriptive of the type of store. So we see here the results. You can, of course, continue on and get more results. if you wanted to. I'm not going to do that here. But that's the search, because once you've come up with the name or some ideas, you need to see if somebody else out there is using that same name. And one example to make sure, you know, let's say that if I wanted to use with the word drone, I wanted to type in, let's say, I wanted to be called Pancake Drones. Now, I could add the S, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to do Pancake and Drone and see what comes up. And no test records. Pancakes and Drones, plural now. No records. Pancakes by itself. Yeah, there are 405 records for just pancakes. Do I want to go through all of them and check to see if there's something that might be similar to drone? That I will leave up to you and your attorney to discuss whether you do that for pancakes and drones. But Pancake Drone or Pancakes Drones did not come up with any searches. So at least you go to the next step. You have a general indication that it seems to be okay. Nobody should be able to preclude you from using drone as part of your trademark. But at the same time, you're not going to get a trademark for just using drone. You need to come up with something unique. So you need to make sure that nobody else is using it. And if you plan to do business internationally, we may be jumping ahead, but while you're coming up with a name, you might as well perhaps think about that. You can have your attorney look internationally through some of the databases out there to see if anybody else has come up with that particular mark, that particular name, and is using it as a registered trademark. Now, the other thing that I will get into on trademarks, and then I want to move on to talking about, you know, so you, so let's say that you found the name, you tried to get it arbitrary or what you believed to be arbitrary or fanciful. One example for fanciful, take the first three letters of the first name of members of your family or distant relatives, mix them up into a word that you don't recognize but sounds cool and you like, and that's probably a fanciful mark. But let's assume that you do that. You are limited to the classifications. And what I mean by that is you certainly can apply for multiple classifications or classes of goods and services. However, the fee, the filing fee, is per mark per class. So just because I get a mark for legal services does not mean that I can preclude somebody from using my mark to sell clothing. If I want to also sell clothing using that mark, then I need to apply for that mark in the class that would encompass those goods. So you need to be specific in the nature of the goods and the services that you're going to use. And again, this comes down to working with your attorney, your lawyer, to identify the goods, the description of goods. You need to come up with descriptions of the goods, and it's less expensive to use the pre-approved descriptions that the USPTO has than to come up with your novel description. But we have had clients, I've dealt with people that want their specific description of the goods, but it's not just the description. You're limited to the description has to match the classification of goods or services. So, for example, clothing is different than legal services. Clothing is different than radio. Clothing is different than, it may even be different than, for example, accessories, hair accessories. So you need to work through and see where the particular product that you have happens to be in terms of what you're looking for. And if you do have an intent to use in some of the, if you do have an intent to use a mark in some different areas, then perhaps you can also file file an application for the area in which you are using it, and then file a separate application for intent to use in the other classifications. You're going to pay a fee with the Patent and Trademark Office, a separate fee for each class anyway, and by separating those, you're going to eliminate the possibility of just a rejection right away or a problem. I always file, if I have a client that is already using the mark in commerce in a particular class, I'm going to do that application, and then if there's an intent to use in other areas, include that in other areas. Now, just a point to be made, even within the description of the goods and services, when you're filing out the description of goods and services, you might be interested, or you might want to list, you can add multiple descriptions as long as they're in the same class, except you have to be actually selling those products. So let's say it's the general clothing class and you're only selling shoes. And I, right now, I don't even know if, let's choose jeans. You're only selling jeans, because I don't know if shoes fall into exactly the same class. I imagine that they might. But jeans are going to be different than underwear, which is going to be different than blouses, which is going to be different than suits. And so if you're only selling one type of clothing and you haven't started expanding into those, you really can't use those additional items in the application for the goods that you're using in commerce. So be careful about all those elements. So what are some other things? You've thought about the name, you've searched the USPTO, you're not focusing on the state trademarks, you're focusing on USPTO, you search, you put some terms in, it looks clear as far as you can tell. You know what you want to sell, and you're not interested in expanding at the moment, so we're not having to worry about other classes. We're focused on one class. What do you do then? Well, soon after you file your application, it's going to be public record. So at the same time that you start to file your public trademark application, and it's pending, it'll be about 4 to 5, maybe a little less, maybe a little longer, months before you get a response from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. I'm not going to get into office actions and how to respond to those and so forth at the moment, but you're not going to get your registration right away. You've got some time to wait. But do you wait for those 3, 4, 5 months, 6 months, to see whether you get the trademark or not, the registered trademark, before buying a domain name? Absolutely not. As soon as you come up with that unique name and you have the business name, you also want, before filing for the trademark, I would argue, you want to search to see if the particular domain name is available that you want. If you're starting with .com, then most of the search, most of the companies selling trademarks are going to be able to search .com. If you're wanting some of the different scattered TLDs, like .ski or .law, you're going to have to go to those individual registrars that actually cover that. So just because, like, if you go to Network Solutions or GoDaddy and you search a particular TLD and it says not available, that doesn't mean that it's not available necessarily. They just might not sell that TLD, top-level domain. So make sure that you are searching with a registrar, a domain name registrar, that has the capacity to sell you that particular TLD, and it should know then whether or not it's actually available or not. The timing of all this is important. I would argue that before you even search for a domain name through one of those platforms, through one of the registrars, you can just simply go to your web browser, type in the domain, try to access it, and see what happens. My concern, and I'm not saying that there's any particular company out there that does this, but my concern is that I just have, the more that I start putting an idea out into the world publicly, the more somebody else can pick up on it. So before I actually see if I can register the domain name, I just don't search and then 5 weeks later come back. There's no point to that. So if you've come up with the name, you search the USPTO database, it looks good, you've contacted your attorney, you're working with an attorney. At the same time that you are going to apply for that trademark, you need to secure the domain name that you want with that mark. Do you need to secure every domain with every top level domain with your mark? I would say not. That's just a lot of money and a lot of time. And the advantage to obtaining the mark, again, is that if you do get it registered, then you're going to be able to preclude somebody from using the same mark in the same class for the same goods and services. And first the file is important to a certain extent. There are a couple quick points that I want to make. One, if there's a McDonald's restaurant selling hamburgers in a small town in Illinois, and there's no federal registered trademark yet for that, and then big McDonald's corporation comes by and files for the McDonald's trademark, McDonald's can preclude anybody else who has not yet used that mark from using it in the future, assuming it gets the registered trademark in the United States. But it can't stop somebody that was using that mark prior to it obtaining the federal registered trademark. So if somebody out there is using Jack and the Beanstalk candy to sell candy, Jack and the Beanstalk candy, and I don't even know if that would be available and whether somebody else has that. This is just an example. And they don't register it. They're selling, let's say, in St. Louis, Missouri, and another company comes along in Dubuque or, let's say, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and files for the registered trademark. They can't stop our St. Louis company from using it. But they can also lock in the St. Louis company from expanding. So there are even nuances to that, the geographic locations, whether somebody's using it or not. But, you know, where I'm saying if somebody out there, if there might be a business out there using it and you choose to use a mark, that's up to you. But the real focus on whether to apply for registration is whether or not somebody else has a registered trademark. And I would recommend that you use a mark that nobody else is using already, because of brand recognition and confusion. The point of having registered trademarks, the point of protecting all of this, is to avoid confusion, likelihood of confusion in the marketplace. The other thing that I want to mention is that let's say that you're worried about somebody getting those domain names that you haven't purchased on the other TLDs. Well, the Trademark Clearinghouse for that allows you have to use somebody that has the ability to register on your behalf if you don't do it yourself. But you can register your mark with the Trademark Clearinghouse, and you will get notification. It doesn't prevent somebody from getting a mark, or it doesn't prevent somebody from getting a domain name or acquiring a domain name where the mark has been registered with the Trademark Clearinghouse, but it provides the individual buying that domain name warning, and it provides you, the trademark holder that's registered it with the Trademark Clearinghouse, notice that somebody has attempted or has acquired that domain name. But again, if you've acquired the business name, you've acquired the trademark, you've come up with the trademark, the idea, you love it, it's great, and it seems clear on the USPTO, at the same time that your attorney or you, but I recommend using an attorney, at the same time that your legal counsel is filing that trademark, you want to get that domain. You want to get the domain name. And why do I say get it at the same time? Why not get the domain name and 3 weeks later get the trademark or apply for the trademark? it may be a bit of paranoia, but if I get the domain name and somebody thought of the same idea, they see that I have the domain name, they love the name and say, well, I can just get another top-level domain. I really didn't need the .com. I don't want the .com anyway. And they go to the USPTO and they see, aha, they haven't registered with their, they haven't applied for the Federal Trademark Office registration yet. I'm going to do that. Well, that's the more important thing here, you know. So if you're going to do something first, it would be apply for the trademark before you get the domain. You can search, as I said. You want to search to see if somebody is using that domain name, because you don't want to spend the money on applying for a trademark where somebody has the very domain name. But that's your due diligence. Search the Patent and Trademark Office for similar or exact trademarks. Go to the web browser, put in the domain name that you're wanting, see if it pops up. Then perhaps use one of the registrars to see if it's available. But time all of that right around so that you're going to file for the trademark, you're going to acquire the domain or domains that you want at the same time. That way, somebody can't scour the USPTO database and see a really cool application for a trademark and try to go out and get the domains, which would be cyber squatting. That's another topic, another day. And likewise, somebody can't go through and find that somebody's registered a really cool domain name and look to see if somebody has applied for the trademark and do that before you have with your cool name. So that all the timing of that should all be done around the same time. Once you get the trademark, you'll want to register it. I think these days with all the different TLDs, we're not in a world where there's just .com, .org, .net that you can acquire and have and feel that you've covered the bases. There are many, many out there. And so it is a recommended strategy to, once you have the trademark, complete the registration with the Trademark Clearinghouse. Now, I imagine that many of you have lots of questions, and there are a lot of nuances that we really don't have the time to go in for here today. And maybe we'll have guests on to talk about this further, and maybe I'll even ask them, how did they come up with the name? What did they do? Did they do what I've recommended? The other approach, though, or the corollary to getting the trademark and getting the domain name is also getting the social media accounts. So at the same time, you also want to go out and get the social media accounts. But just because somebody may have the same Twitter, you may even want to see that before you apply for the trademark and get the domain name. But just because somebody has the same Twitter doesn't mean that you shouldn't proceed forward. I mean, if you can get all of the other major top-tier social media accounts, the trademark and the domain, then I think that's a good day. With the number of people out there in the world and coming up with the different names and ideas and things, it may be that, you know, Captain Drone or Cowboy Drone has the Twitter handle Cowboy Drone, but he just happens to be a cowboy that flies drones in his spare time. He's not intending to use that as a commercial trademark, as a mark in commerce. So just because he has at Cowboy Drone, does that mean that if you can get cowboydrone.com and nobody's applied for the mark and you get all the social media accounts, you shouldn't do it? I don't think so. Come up with a different Twitter account. Ideally, Twitter may be great to have, but we can all be creative and expand a little bit about that. Maybe you get the Cowboy Drone. In any case, to summarize, you know, you want to do your due diligence. Ideally before you come up with a name, you understand the different classifications, generic, descriptive, arbitrary, and fanciful. If you're just coming up with a business, you're not going to get the generic, certainly. You're not going to get descriptive because you've got to show secondary meaning and have 5 years under your belt. So that's kind of out of the window. So you want to be shooting for an arbitrary or fanciful mark that will survive the scrutiny. Once you've come up with some good ideas or a single idea, then you also want to be running by. See if somebody has the domain name. And I, before necessarily going to the registrars and searching for that domain name and putting it into their query, which maybe they assume or acquire a catalog of those and do something with it. I'm not saying that any one of them is doing that, but that's where some paranoia comes in. Let's be careful. Just put it in the web browser URL and see if it comes up with anything. That's a quick choice to do that. It's going to be based on your browser history, and it's not necessarily easily providing somebody your cool idea. If both that and then checking the USPTO database are clear, then at least we've got a green light to go the next step. You talk with an attorney about registering the trademark. And, you know, the fee to file the trademark these days, if you choose the pre-existing descriptions for a word mark, it's typically around $225. The mark fees can go up to $325 to $325, depending on some variables. That's the actual fee. That's putting aside what your attorney, your lawyer will charge. That's the fee to the Patent and Trademark Office. But when you go to your attorney, your lawyer, you're talking about the name, you want to get their rates, what they're going to do for you. You want to try to make sure that, particularly if you have any international interests, that you're going to search not only USPTO, but that your attorney will also be able to search an international database. That doesn't mean they're going to search every country everywhere in the world to see if somebody's using that for business. That doesn't mean what that, you know, that's not what that means. But there are databases out there where we can search a wide berth of nations and countries to see if it's being used. Then timing. When you're ready to file for the application, the trademark, your lawyer attorney has, your trademark attorney has all the information. They're ready to pull the trigger. You've authorized it. You want to get the domain name right at the same time. Try to get that domain name and all those social media accounts, because then you're not spreading out what a cool idea it is before you get the trademark. It's all time to go together. Domain name, trademark, federal trademark, domain name, federal trademark, social media accounts, top tier. Do you need to get everything under the sun? Probably not, but you need the top tier, those that you're definitely going to use. Then once you actually get your registered trademark, if you do, and I wish you well, then you want to think about having it put into the trademark clearinghouse so that you may get notice when somebody tries to get a domain name with your mark or a portion of your mark perhaps included. There's certainly other ways to keep abreast than to protect your brand, but those are some preliminary steps associated with trademarks. So think about trademarks. I recommend that my clients and that anybody, entrepreneur, any business that's thinking of a new area or rebranding or coming up with something different, you want to go through those steps. The other kind of things that you might want to do is, particularly if you're looking at fanciful names, is that you may want to Google to make sure that you haven't, in your effort to be entirely creative, you haven't put together that means something bad in a foreign language. You want to make sure that you're not going to be using a brand that's offensive. You want a brand that's going to be able to set you apart, that's going to make a statement or easily identify your company set apart from all the others. Now, that's talking about the trademark, the domain, the social media. But another thing that's important is another place to check the databases is whatever state or location you happen to be in, check with the Secretary of State. And this is, again, before you pull the trigger to buy a bunch of things, and then realize that, okay, somebody may not have applied for a federal mark, but there's somebody already using the business, the same name in a business in your state. Well, you know, then you're going to be disappointed. So what is the checklist and the order? Come up with a name. Think about arbitrary, fanciful. Or if you're going to use, you know, descriptive words, make the combination of descriptive words or generic words, make the combination such that it's arbitrary or fanciful, more perhaps arbitrary. So you come up with some names. Then you check the USPTO database. And this is not registering yet. This is just checking the database to see if there's anything out there so that if you come up with a great idea, you can scratch some things off if they're already taken. Then you also want to check the Secretary of State, particularly where you intend to be doing business, and if you're going to register in some other state for whatever tax or legal benefits, such as Delaware, Nevada, that you check those states as well. If those are all clear, you're wanting to go to your URL, not so much the registrars yet. Put in the domain name that you're going to want and see if it's available. Go to Twitter, put in Twitter the handle in your URL. Just use the nomenclature, see if it comes up, see if somebody has it. If those are all clear and you're looking good, then that's the time to be moving forward to the next steps where you're going to perhaps incorporate, where you're going to perhaps file then for the registered trademark. You want to kind of coordinate that all together. Do you need all the ducks in the row? Do you need to be out there actually doing business? As we said, no. You can file with an intent to use. So you don't necessarily need to file for the business name with the Secretary of State, but you can file with the Federal Trademark Office with an intent to use. You get the domain. You get all the social media. Don't wait to be using those. Get all those. Lock them up while you can. And then when you're ready to move forward with the business, you can proceed from there. I would argue that if you know you're definitely going to do it, you've come up with the name, you've locked it all in, that's also the time to ensure that you create your entity and secure the business name with the Secretary of State so that somebody doesn't saunter in and apply for that business name while you're asleep. Those are some ideas today on trademarks and on acquiring trademarks, some branding, some thoughts to secure those, to protect the brand out there. And then the final point is once you have all this, you want to employ and use some services that will help track the use of your name online. You can use Google has services like that where it just gives you alerts where keywords come up. But there are other services out there that monitor your business, your brand, your trademark online to see where your customers are saying good things, hopefully, and where maybe somebody might have said something negative so that you can do what you need to ensure that everything is good. I wish you all good. My name is Charles Mudd. I'm the host of Startup Radio. I look forward to having guests coming up in the next few months and through the year. Startup Radio has been around for 5 years now. We had a respite, but we're good. And it's part now of the STEM Daddy Network. Proud to be part of that and to share that space with our sister shows, Gaming Chords and STEM Voices. Stay tuned for exciting conversations, exciting content, informative content in the coming months, and I hope years. All the best. Thank you, and have a great, great day.
If you own a small business, it's not a question of if some hacker is going to attempt to attack your company. It's a question of when. Let cyberpolicy.com keep you safe. Cyberpolicy is the first end-to-end solution that combines cyber planning, security, and insurance. With cyberpolicy, your business will be protected against cyber attacks for as little as 40 cents a day. Visit cyberpolicy.com today and get a quote in just 4 minutes. Cyberpolicy.com.
Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts from 2 to 6 p.m. and get any medium iced coffee or iced tea for 99 cents. Whether it's refreshing Dunkin' iced tea or the cool boost of Dunkin' iced coffee, they're always delicious and always freshly brewed. A deal like this won't last forever, so come into Dunkin' from 2 to 6 p.m. for any medium Dunkin' iced coffee or iced tea for 99 cents. America runs on Dunkin'. Plus applicable taxes, participation may vary, limited time offer.